Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Captain Hunter's Podcast, the podcast that is dedicated towards bridging the divide between the police and the communities that they serve. Thank you so much for taking this ride with us. And we got a great episode for you today. Dr. Kanika Turner is back on this podcast. If you remember, she came on the podcast before and she talked about the opioid crisis and epidemic and what people can do if they are struggling with that particular, I guess for lack of a better term, disease or problem. So she is back on the show to talk about the coronavirus. I really appreciate her coming back. And she is just a mountain of wisdom and knowledge and understanding. She's been keeping up as a family doctor. It's her job to keep up with everything. So I am not going to read her bio. So just go over to the previous episode of Dr. Kanika Turner when she talked about the opioid crisis. There you can become familiarized with her bio from there. So this was a live episode, as many of you may know or heard that we tried to do a live episode through Podbean, fairly successful. We did have some technical difficulties where I guess there were some people in the chat. I do not know if they were able to or if they tried to log in with questions. Actually, I do know one person tried to log in with questions because she ended up Facebooking me some messages. So one person did. So I don't know if others did. Any technical difficulties was on the Podbean's part. I did write them an email stating that I had tried to do this live session and the chat didn't work and also the phone calls did not work. So hopefully they straighten that out and we'll try to do that again. I'd like to know a little bit of feedback. Feedback that I asked for previously was, you know, how people listen to the podcast. Do you download it? Just listen to it on a website? Do you subscribe to it? Are you rating, sharing, and all that kind of stuff? If you could remember to shoot me those through the email cptlhunter@gmail.com or DM me or Instagram message me or message me or whatever, because it's very important that I understand how people are getting this information, how you're listening to it, how you're coming to find out about it. I do know a few people are listening in through because they get the LinkedIn link. So I'm just curious as to how you all are coming about this information and coming across this information. This session, like I said, was recorded live. We did have the technical difficulties, so I do apologize for that. So we're going to pick up with Dr. Turner. And the only question I asked her was what she has she been up to. And so therefore, we're going to pick up the point where she tells us essentially she has been up to nothing, nothing new since the last time we talked, just working and, you know, raising her daughter and all that kind of stuff. Before we get into that, make sure that you follow me, CPTL Hunter on Instagram, CPTL Hunter on Twitter, Facebook, Captain Hunter's Podcast, YouTube, Captain L Hunter. And so I think that's it. And so let's get into it. Once again, this session was live, so there's no editing and all that kind of stuff like I usually do. So I think it came out pretty good. So here we go.
Assist the community with feeling safe and, you know, ease some of the anxiety. But otherwise, I'm here to answer any questions and no other real changes.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. So let's just kind of dig into it. Now I got to find my notes here. The coronavirus, I don't know if you heard it, but there is a, there is a meme, a song that's going around. And I just think it's absolutely ear catching and fantastic. I guess it's featuring Cardi B. I don't know. Anyway, not that I'm into Cardi B, but somebody kind of made a mixtape of her. And I thought it was pretty entertaining there. And I think that a lot of people are passing around these memes and just kind of making light or not making light, but making the best out of a bad situation.
Right.
And some of them have been really, really funny, you know, at least in my opinion. Anyway. So.
I've seen some pretty funny ones. I mean, I guess it's always good to try to, you know, stay humorous so that you won't get, you know, depressed and down and things like that. But, I've seen some of them as well. So.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
So talk to us about the coronavirus. What is it? Where did it come from? What's up with all this?
Right. So just start from the beginning, you know, this originated over in China. Right around like the end of December, I think December 13th or mid December is when China had seen an uptake in cases of pneumonia. And so as a result of that, you know, they did report that to the proper authorities. But unfortunately, this pretty much just kind of just spread like wildfire. And one of the reasons why is because this is a new virus. So coronavirus has been around. It's similar like other viruses, like rhinoviruses or influenza. The thing that's unique with this one is that it's a different strain. So the virus essentially has mutated and has transferred from an animal host to a human host. And since we, as humans, this is our first time being exposed to this virus, the virulence, the transmission is going to be so great. So it's kind of, I don't know if anyone's been following CNN and some of the other news stories that, you know, we're comparing this to the pandemic of influenza back in 1918, because it was the same thing that took place then. So we're learning a lot from previous experiences with 1918. The only thing that's different with this one, back then it was more so germ related. This one is pretty much kind of, you know, a new virus that has entered the human species. So it's pretty virulent. I know some things that I normally hear about, you know, people get concerned about Corona beer being related, and it's not related. But Corona itself, I mean, I don't know. I've seen some memes about people, you know, avoiding, Corona beer because, you know, for fear they may get the coronavirus, and it's completely unrelated.
I did not hear that one.
But interestingly, Corona, it stands for crown. And when scientists look under the microscope, on the end of the proteins, it looks like little crown heads. So that's where corona came from. And then we attach it to saying virus. So it's a coronavirus. So that's where that came from. But we've seen coronavirus through my training. I've heard about it. You know, we've always were educated on it. It's just this one is different because it's a different strain, and we call it a novel coronavirus. Now, they think this one originated from bats in caves. And the idea is back in Wuhan, China, it was a seafood market. And so the idea is they think that they were selling these bats, or even somebody, a human, was in close proximity to these bats and transferred, and then they went back to the city. So the transmission is definitely from a human reservoir, I mean, from an animal reservoir to a human reservoir, and then it just took off like that. So this is the first pandemic in years and years and years. So it's something new, definitely. You know, what I'm telling people, follow the CDC recommendations closely to stay safe. So there's a lot of things that's coming out. I think the biggest thing I want to talk about is the mask. You know, people are getting so concerned. Everyone's trying to walk around with masks, and it won't actually protect you like people think. So we use masks. They're good for a few reasons. So let's say you're a healthcare provider, you know, you're dealing with sick people. The mask will protect you, you know, you from your mucosa, your mouth, your nose, from coming in contact with those droplets. Now, if you yourself are sick, you do want to go ahead and wear that mask to kind of help prevent your droplets from spreading. But just walking around completely asymptomatic person, you know, no symptoms at all, there's no need for you to wear a mask. And really, you know, we recommend the N95 mask because it's a respirator, so it can actually filter the air. So regular surgical masks are only beneficial for people if you have symptoms and you're trying to prevent the spread, but it won't help you, you know, if you're an asymptomatic person.
Okay. So yeah. How are people getting, how is it transmitted?
Right. So right now it's droplets. So right now we're telling people, so for example, if someone sneezes or cough, the droplets, that virus, it can actually linger in the air for a while, and it can also survive on surfaces for up to 3 hours. So that's why you hear a lot of things, you know, wipe down surfaces using appropriate disinfectant to help kill the virus on the surface. We're telling people, you know, don't touch your eyes, your nose, or your mouth, because you could potentially, you know, the virus can enter in that way. Now, the one thing too that's coming out new, so this virus can pretty much kind of can incubate, or it can be, you know, inside someone from 2 to 14 days without even having symptoms. So viral shedding can occur before somebody become symptomatic. So that's why it's a big push for this social distancing and keeping people at home or self-quarantine or shutting down restaurants and bars. It's because people can walk around and be a reservoir and not even have symptoms. So pretty much it's transmitting from person to person by droplets, sneezing, coughing, and things like that. So if you are sick, some things I tell my patients, either sneeze or cough in a tissue, throw that tissue in a trash bag, a trash can that's lined with a trash bag. If you have to cough or sneeze and you don't have a tissue, you want to sneeze or cough into your elbow. Definitely use hand sanitizer, at least 60% alcohol-based hand sanitizer. Washing your hands with soap and water for 20 seconds. Normally, we tell people sing the happy birthday song while you wash your hands, really scrubbing under the fingernails. So right now, that's how it's spreading from person to person. But, you know, my biggest concern are those people that are asymptomatic, that's walking around with the virus, because it can, you know, it can be within, we can incubate this virus between anywhere from 2 to 14 days before we even get symptoms.
Now that incubation period is much longer than the flu. Is that right?
Right. It is. And there's a little bit of difference, you know. So the other thing with the coronavirus is pretty much affecting the lower respiratory tract. So that's why we see the shortness of breath, the cough. You'll also see a fever. So I tell people a fever is defined as 100.4 or above. So 100.4 or above, and you will have cough and shortness of breath. Now, right now, we are asking for that travel history, but as we see more cases with community spread, that'll still be important, but we may start to see community spread just within cities, you know, just the same way, you know, that we've seen in New York or up in Washington right now. So few things with that. So if you have the flu, typically it's sneezing, coughing, runny nose, sore throat, more so upper respiratory tract symptoms. Coronavirus is really hitting that lower respiratory tract. Cough, shortness of breath, that fever will also set in. So I don't want people to get concerned about, I have coronavirus, when it's really the flu, because people who don't know, you're not in the healthcare field, you may think you have coronavirus and it's really the flu, because that's pretty prevalent as well too. And unfortunately, I always recommend, you know, everyone getting their flu vaccine. And this year is about 45% effective. So definitely, if you have not gotten your flu vaccine, make sure you get that as well.
And so we're a long way off from this vaccine for this one, right? They're saying a year off.
Correct. Right. I read something today saying that they're trying to do a phase 1 clinical trials with a vaccine. But by that time that actually hit the main market, they've been maybe months and months down the road. And I think where we are now and, you know, with the United States, that we have way more cases that's going to come about right now. I do think it's going to get a little bit more severe before, you know, we'll see some improvement. So definitely, you know, this social distancing that we're telling people to stay at home, you know, not to go out to bars or restaurants or movie theaters just until we get through this time period. And right now, I can't really predict, but I'm suspecting we're probably looking at May or June that far ahead. But definitely, I think it's going to get worse before we see some improvement here.
Is it going to get worse because of the incubation period? It could be a lot of people sick.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Right. I think so. A lot of people sick. But the other thing too, though, you know, we have to also talk about, you know, our populations who are most at risk. So, you know, adults who are over the age of 60 right now, I would definitely recommend, you know, for them to stay at home, not to go around older people, just because their immune systems, they don't have that reserve as someone who's young and healthy in their 20s, in which they may be able to kind of come through and fight this a little bit better. So the severity that we're seeing with the disease is hitting that population above 60. And then in addition, if they have underlying medical comorbidities, you know, heart disease, lung disease, kidney disease, those people we're seeing that is really, really affecting them. So people with diabetes, hypertension, COPD, you know, if you're over 60, that's the population that is really affecting. And that's where we're seeing a lot of these deaths occur. Younger people, you're healthy, definitely we're telling you to self-quarantine. Unfortunately, there's no treatment for this. So it's just medical management right now. Ibuprofen, Tylenol is needed for fever. You know, for any cough or congestion, you can use some Mucinex or, you know, common over-the-counter cough products. But that at-risk population, I definitely recommend, you know, they stay at home and kind of stay away from people who may be sick or, you know, just stay away from large crowds right now.
How prepared is the medical field for all of this?
Yeah, so that's a whole big other issue. You know, I'm on this private Facebook group. It's a physician mom group. And, you know, we're talking about this constantly. Unfortunately, this is new with hitting the hospital scene. I think our hospitals, you know, they're doing the best that they can. Our emergency department personnel, unfortunately, they are the frontline staff. So it's definitely recommended to wear their personal protective equipment to prevent transmission. But this is affecting our healthcare system, you know, with, you know, clinics. This is something new that we're trying to deal with. I think one of the things for us, you know, how to test. Originally, it was the CDC. Now, you know, the country is sending out more testing kits to, you know, local municipalities and cities and counties to be able to have that high level testing. So that's getting out right now. But right now we're doing the best that we can. And I think, you know, unfortunately, by the time we get ahead of this, I think we're going to already be in that severe disease range where we're getting many people being diagnosed with this. We're getting people hospitalized. But if we can, you know, use these precautions beforehand of social distancing, that may help. So right now, there's lots of studies that's coming out with China. We're reading those studies. We're learning from what happened in China starting in December. So I think that's great. We're giving us some guidance. And we're kind of going, you know, following the CDC recommendations and going day to day because things are changing. You know, just on Sunday, the CDC announced no gatherings of 50 people. And then today, you know, the White House came out, no gatherings of 10 people. So day by day, we're getting new updated information on how to handle this with a healthcare system.
And so you're in agreement with all the, I actually don't like that, you know, telling people to go in a house and no gatherings more than 50 people. New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, where I am, are passing these type of rules, or I guess they're passing these type of rules where they don't want anybody more than 50 people. I think Rhode Island's like 25 people. I think that's a little extreme.
Really? No. So I think, you know, and I'm glad you said this. I think a lot of people might feel that way. So the idea is, let me talk a little bit about social distancing and why this is important and why it's such a big push for us to follow that. So this kind of goes back into that incubation period. Viruses are able to shed. So one thing that we've noticed in those cities in which they had their first confirmed case, I mean, it skyrocketed. We had cases being confirmed. It was an exponential growth. So in order to, from a public health perspective, to prevent the transmission of disease spreading, it's best to stay isolated like this. So it's a public health type theory that we're applying to this. With the 1918 epidemic, they looked at St. Louis compared to Philadelphia. Now, right when St. Louis had their first case, they implemented these measures, social distancing, isolation, not going out into public places. Well, it took Philadelphia a while, maybe a week or so, to kind of put things into place. And as a result, when they looked at the mortality and the severity, St. Louis had better outcomes compared to Philadelphia because we implemented these measures up front. So the idea is, if we can prevent people, whether you're healthy or sick, from going into public places, we can prevent the spread of the disease. So that's the reason why there's a big push to keep people at home or away from crowds right now.
Do you think, is there a prognosis for how many people may end up dying from all this?
No, we don't really have a prognosis right now. But I think with the number of cases that we're seeing, and actually I'm pulling up as we speak right now, number of cases to date. And we got in the United States, we got 3,487 cases and a total of 68 deaths. So we have more people, you know, reporting positive cases, which is a good thing that we're identifying these cases. But, you know, unfortunately, we've had 68 people who died from coronavirus. And as I stated, you know, with the virus still shedding, we can't really identify who may have symptoms and who may not have symptoms. So let's say somebody is, they're carrying this virus around, they go to the grocery store, they're exposed to hundreds of people, those people go back to their homes, they're exposing people in their homes, those people leave out, they're going back to their jobs, to their schools. You know, now we just kind of set up a pathway for this virus to pretty much replicate exponentially and infect the whole community. And that's kind of what we're seeing up in New York and in Washington. And other cities are trying to prevent that from happening by quickly putting these measures into place.
When these measures come down, and I probably should know this, but maybe you'll know better than I do. When these measures come down, Is it enforceable by the law, by the police? I mean, the police are expected to go out there arresting people.
See, right now, I have not heard that part. I know, like, for example, in St. Louis City, St. Louis County, we got our measures in place, but I have not heard anything in which law enforcement enforcing this. And I know today, like, New Jersey put the curfew in place. So I don't really know how law enforcement will follow that. I know there's, if someone's going to work, of course, they're okay with it. Because then we get into a whole other issue. Let's say if law enforcement, you know, are trying to enforce this, where are you going to put people? You're going to lock people up in jail with that defeats the purpose.
Exactly.
You know, of this. So right now, I'm thinking they're trying to hold people accountable of following this. I think, you know, with the school closings and, you know, they have certain recommendations coming out with churches, restaurants closing and bars closing, that hopefully people will take this serious enough and stay at home. But right now, I don't really know the perspective that the law enforcement would take, because I don't think it'd be beneficial to lock people up.
Sure. No, and I agree. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. Now you're going to stick them taken from that lesser close proximity to more close proximity.
Right, yeah. Right. And then we're going to infect a whole nother population. So I don't know the role of law enforcement. I know I did see, you know, there's a big push for law enforcement to also get personal protective equipment for them to have access to hand sanitizers or disinfectants for their cars as they transport people. So I have seen some things like that. You know, going into place as well. So I think the biggest thing, you know, this is affecting our healthcare system. It's going to affect our economy in huge ways because we have to think about it. You know, we're putting these things into place, telling people stay at home and daycares are closing, schools are closing. You know, what about the working mom or the working families, you know, that's on an hourly salary? You know, are we going to get the paid sick leave? Are we going to have, you know, are they still going to be able to get that part? If they're not going to go to school or daycare, you know, what are we going to do for these kids for us getting a meal? So I think, you know, we're getting a whole different spectrum of things that we didn't even think about or consider, you know, that one virus can affect an entire system like this. So hopefully there are some bills in place to allow, you know, 14 days paid sick leave, to allow for food vouchers. So hopefully a lot of states will pass some things like that. Cause we have to think about the big picture, you know, that it's going to affect millions of people in our country. And not just if you have the virus, but I think the effect and the possibility, the damage that this virus can do, it's going to affect the economy, you know?
Yeah, no, I definitely understand that. And speaking about the kids, who are staying home, and, I know that many school systems are actually going to be feeding the kids because they understand that many kids don't get breakfast and lunch, which I think that says a lot about our country, that kids are depending upon school lunches in order to eat, you know, and I think that really just says a lot. And it's very, very disappointing.
Right. I agree. I know there's in St. Louis, there were a few restaurants that opened to give free meals to kids. They can come by and pick up a free meal at lunchtime. So I think on one part, I think it says a lot with the community coming together. But then also, you know, I think we're unroofing other social issues that we need to address. You know, in this day and age, it's sad that a kid, you know, that we're still living in a time where that's, you know, the only source of a kid's meal is breakfast and lunch. You know, so, you know, we're opening up a whole nother can of worms. But I think, you know, what the schools are doing, what restaurants are doing, you know, we have to think about our kids, you know, during this time as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. Absolutely. So can you talk about how quickly this spread? Now, this is going to be very much a political question, but we'll go there. So there has been, depending once again on which networks you one watches, CNN, MSNBC, or Fox News, right? You could get a completely different understanding about what's going on. And in comparison to, you talked about the police officers who get disinfectant for the cars and all that kind of stuff. And I remember when the Ebola virus is going on, I was one of the persons who had to give the training at my department, make sure everybody watched the videos, how do we put on masks and all that kind of stuff. So in comparison to what we saw then, and I think that only like 11 people were infected with Ebola and like two died or something like that, some ridiculously low numbers, but we had the preparation there. How did this happen where you talked about this came to light in China, at least back in December. I know I watched CNN when they were talking about how they knew about this, they being the CDC and other experts knew about this in January. Here we are in March, and how did this happen?
Right. No, that's a really good question because, you know, they keep a surveillance of, you know, new and emerging diseases throughout the world. And so I was actually reading an article earlier stating that, you know, they saw this and I think it was just poor, you know, prediction. I think they felt that, okay, this is isolated to China. It's not going to spread. We can, you know, we can,
why would you think you know, that? Why would anybody think that with boats and airplanes? Why would you think that?
And how people are, I agree. We have more people, you know, and that's the thing, you know, when you compare it back then in 1918, we got people that's more mobile now. We got, you know, trains, we got, using the airplane. We got people driving, people traveling all over the world. When before, you know, people wasn't traveling all over the world like they are now. We got goods and things being shipped all over the world. You know, it's a little bit different. So no, I agree with you that, you know, that they were aware of this, but I don't think they were aware of this can potentially become a pandemic. So that's just me quoting it. I'm not for sure. I don't know the details. I'm not at the CDC, but I do know they knew about this beforehand. But one of the issues is too, that once you have a new virus, it's new like this. It's pretty much once it's set into that host, and we as human beings, we have no type of immune system mounted against this. It's going to just spread like wildfire. And I think that's what happened, that it started over there in China. We saw these unusual cases of pneumonia. They were tracking it, but they did not think that it was going to spread to this extent until, you know, here we are now. And I think the biggest thing was that Diamond cruise ship. And then we have people traveling, you know, into the United States, you know, that actually brought it. So, like I said, I can't speak for the whole country or for the CDC, but I think one of the things that we're dealing with, they did not predict or did not, maybe they just didn't know that this virus is going to be this severe. Because I actually said they follow coronavirus. I mean, even with SARS back in, what was it, 2003, 2005? When that epidemic came, that was a form of coronavirus that took over there. Even with the MERS, the Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome, that when they came out, that was triggered by a coronavirus. Now we're with this one, COVID-19, this is slightly, it's different from the other ones, but we've known about coronavirus. Just, you know, this being able to mutate like this and become so deadly, you know, that's what's new. So, you know, but even so, if they knew about it, you know, what measures could we have put in place beforehand? Because with a new virus like this, it's going to spread, you know? Mm, yeah. So I would say, you know, that's just me, Dr. Turner, speaking. I'm not an infectious disease specialist, but just for me reading and following this and just, you know, I do like public health. You know, they knew about this, but I don't think they were aware of, how deadly this could be. And maybe they were, and they didn't want to, you know, alarm the United States. Now, I will say, I think it was something that Trump made a comment that people didn't know, and that wasn't true. They didn't know. Like, they follow this stuff pretty closely, the CDC and the World Health Organization. They do follow it pretty closely.
Well, that's the understanding that I got. The World Health Organization and the CDC knew about this, or there's some branch of the military that, like you said, that follows this. I think it's part of the army, something, whatever.
And that's their job. Follow it.
Yeah.
Right. But I think, you know, there's always that rate limiting factor that when you have a new virus like this that enter our human species, you know, it's going to spread because we have no way to protect ourselves against it. And it's going to be as simply as just like, you know, in that seafood market, it started there and now it has spread all over the world, you know, so.
So they're saying that the worst is yet to come. I know that's pretty scary.
Correct.
So
yeah,
what are we looking at as far as timelines? Because the movie Mulan was supposed to come out, and I'm very upset that I can't watch that movie.
And everything else, right?
Yeah.
Right.
when they cancel the movies, I'm like, what?
right. So, I mean, I agree. I said it just really hit our country in devastating numbers. And if you really look at that, you know, the CDC, they have this nice map where it's pretty much, you know, it's hitting the coastal areas first. So Washington, California, definitely on the eastern coast right now, and down in Florida. You know, in my opinion, it may just spread inwardly. Hopefully, you know, we can put in these measures now to kind of keep everyone safe by doing, you know, the social distancing. Hopefully that will help as well. But, you know, in those cities, you know, on those coasts, it's definitely, you know, pretty much spreading. But the idea, like I said, with this, with the social distancing, the idea is if you get ahead of the virus before it spread by limiting its transmission, that's one way you can get ahead of it. And that's what we're doing here. We're trying to get ahead of it. But unfortunately, you know, if we look at the data, you know, we're going to always be a day behind what's actually reported, because we're reporting on results. We're not reporting data on, you know, initial things. We're reporting on results, confirmed cases, confirmed deaths, confirmed people who are symptomatic. So we're missing everything upstream. So that's why I think there's potentially a lot of people walking around with the virus. The more testing that becomes available, the more positive cases we're going to get. And then we're going to see this wave of so many, you know, of this spreading throughout our community. But hopefully, one thing just with infectious disease perspective, as this virus continue to transmit and spread, that sometimes it can mutate and become less virulent. So that's what we saw with the influenza. That flu has been around, but we have not seen it, you know, how it was back in 1918. But I will say, this year's strain with the flu is pretty devastating. It's actually killed a lot of people too. So, you know, hopefully the flu virus does not become pandemic numbers, but the flu virus is still kind of, you know, every year we got to keep our eye out for that one as well.
Wow. So as far as people walking around with this, and so if somebody gets the sniffles, should they just immediately go get tested, or where are we at with the testing sites? I know you can't answer for the whole country, but where are we at?
Right. So I would say, so the United States, they are, you know, shipping tests to, you know, different cities and locations. So here in Missouri, you know, our state health department in Jefferson City, we have tests there. And then they've just now expanded to some of the local hospitals and clinics. So my clinic, for example, we only have 15 testing kits. So we have to be pretty, you know, pretty strategic in making sure we test people who we think have symptoms. So from a health perspective, you know, let's say if you have symptoms, you know, we don't want people to get alarmed and think, you know, everyone have coronavirus. So we have to do our risk assessment. So those screening questions are going to be huge. And it's pretty much, you know, cough, shortness of breath, and that fever. If you have that and that recent history of travel, or you've been around someone with a confirmed positive case, that'll make me think, as a physician, let me go ahead and swab you. So hopefully, you know, we also, you know, as physicians, don't forget about the flu. And most are also testing for influenza as well. So I've had quite a few patients within the last week come to me with symptoms. You know, they're concerned they have coronavirus and it's actually been the flu, you know, and I've treated them appropriately for the flu. But, you know, I don't want people to get too alarmed. You must have those constellation of symptoms, that cough, that shortness of breath, that fever, recent travel history. China, especially European countries, are now on the rise as well. Or if you're coming from those high-risk areas in the state, Washington, California, New York, or even down in Florida, or if you've been around someone with a confirmed case, those are the ones that I will be a little bit more careful, and I will probably screen them. Another thing, too, don't forget about our airports and, you know, our train stations. If people are, you know, the case that came here, the person was in Chicago, caught the Amtrak, came back here to Missouri, where everyone on that train had to get tested, and that train went all over the Midwest. So we have to think about things like that as well. You know, somebody on the train, you know, was exposed to one person. Everyone may not get it, but they had that exposure and now also have to be tested as well. So hopefully we don't, you know, we get more tests out so we can test more people. I think the CDC, they're able to run about 350 tests per day, I believe, to confirm it. But it'd be really key for hospitals to get, you know, get the testing kits.
So that train that went all over, I mean, what is the, if there's 100 people on the train, what is the transmission rate?
Right. So you have to think about it. One person, I mean, that's where that exponential growth would come in. If you have one person that could have potentially affected 100 people that went over the Midwest, everywhere that person went, they essentially could have been carriers of this virus and exposed everyone at their train station. You know, then let's say they get into the car, let's say the next day they go to work. So that exponential exposure can happen just with one person being around a group of 50 people. And those people taking that back to their environment, then that person just exposed another 50 people. So that's where that exponential growth come in at, by just one person having symptoms.
If someone is exposed, is there a 100% guarantee that they will contract this or any type of virus, the flu or whatever?
Right. So I wouldn't say, you know, 100%. Is it likely? I would say very, you know, highly likely that if you were exposed, you may have it. Now, one thing we do tell people, if you've been around somebody, you know, that potentially was exposed, that's where that 14-day quarantine come into place, because that virus can, you know, incubate for 2 to 14 days. So if someone has been exposed, you know, we tell them to stay at home 14 days, monitor your symptoms. If you develop symptoms, then yes, we can test you for it. So that's where you're getting that people, you know, are being instructed to self-quarantine for 14 days just to make sure they don't develop symptoms.
If a person is generally healthy, right, as you mentioned, they do not have high blood pressure and all those other
diabetes
things.
Right.
Basically, they'll be sick for a few days and just kind of go through the flu-like symptoms. Is that right?
So it's actually, you know, a little more worse than the flu. So their population is higher in 60s, you know, with hypertension, diabetes. It may actually, you know, land them in a hospital, even an ICU and respiratory failure, or with pneumonia. So that's what we're seeing in cases, in severe cases, ICU, being intubated, pneumonia. That's when it's really, really bad. So I do think, you know, that population is that risky population that, you know, can potentially, you know, the fatality rate is a little bit higher. But somebody who's young, in their 20s or 30s, no underlying medical conditions, they may only get mild disease, in which they will be quarantined at home, you know, medically manage their symptoms with ibuprofen, you know, cough suppressants or cough medicines or things like that. So it's really that older population in which you may see that severe disease develop. You know, but the other thing too, there are younger people that may have, you know, immunocompromising type diseases, so autoimmune diseases and things like that, because their immune system is not as capable or healthy to fight off a new virus compared to somebody, you know, who have a completely 100%, you know, a well-reserved immune system.
I think I may have asked you this. Is there a prediction that they have that how many people will pass away?
Not yet. I have not read any predictions. I have not. I know the concern is that the death rate could likely go up, but I have not seen any actual numbers or prediction with saying, you know, this is what we predict as far as with fatality rate. I have not seen that just yet as far as in the United States. I think our biggest push now is a public health approach, that social distancing models. Right now, that's what we're really pushing right now. And as I said, you know, we've had, 3,400 cases, and only, you know, in 68 of those, you know, were reported deaths. So I think right now, looking at that, the number of confirmed positive cases, the number of deaths, right now, I will still say, you know, we're still looking good. We're not up into the hundreds. We definitely have these cases identified, but, you know, our total death rate is a little bit lower compared to Italy and things like that in China right now.
Now, when is it? I mean, we're already in a state of national emergency and all that kind of stuff. When is it much worse? When we, as you said, 68 people have died.
Right, as we get.
How many, when is it really okay? We got to really take
some I think it's worse now. I don't think we have to wait until people die to say right. that it's bad.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's spreading our community. People are getting symptoms. So I would say it's bad now. I don't want to see people die from this, but it's, you know, I would say to prevent it from getting any worse or to prevent those deaths, that's when we need to take this public health approach. But I think it's pretty bad, and I think it's going to get worse. In the next few weeks, I truly believe that.
There's been a few celebrities who've come down with it. 2019 yes. Sexiest Man Alive, well, second sexiest man alive in my mind. Idris Elba came down with Tom Hanks, NBA player. I mean, are they getting it? But because they're in traveling so much, or how?
Right. There's can be travel related, and I know over. I don't know where. Yeah, that's probably likely travel related. I don't know where a lot of them, where Tom Hanks live. If he's
Tom Hanks, I think he was in Australia. I'm not sure.
Australia.
Yeah.
So it's probably likely travel related for a lot of them. And then of course, you know, the European countries definitely, you know, it's spreading like wildfire over there, especially Italy is really, I think Italy had in the last 24 hours, I think they reported 360 something deaths. In the last 24 hours,
and they've reported
about 3,000 new cases just in 24 hours. So it's really, really virulent over there in Italy right now.
I got a
report this morning about it. Get those reports to ring my phone so I can stay in a loop with this. But right now I will say a lot of the cases that they are reporting in the United States are travel related. But we are seeing some person-to-person transmission. So, for example, I actually have the numbers put up right now. So, of those 3,487 cases, 205 of those were travel-related, and then 214 were close contacts, so being in close proximity with somebody who had symptoms. The other thing, too, it says that we have 3,000 cases that's under investigation. So how it starts is that, you know, somebody presumed to be positive. It takes for the CDC to confirm that they actually have a positive case. So presumed positive, you can count it with the positive cases, and then we're waiting for the CDC to confirm that it's an actual case. So right now we actually lump all those cases in as being positive cases. So it looks like it's almost half and half travel related and half close contact related. So this lets me know that it's definitely spreading person to person right now.
How are you staying safe? I mean, you obviously have to treat these people. They're coming in, runny noses, coughing, sneezing.
Right. So some things, a lot of local offices, what we're implementing. So, you know, definitely a lot of us are trying to utilize telemedicine now. So, you know, it used to be certain locations, certain organizations, they were able to do this. So that's, you know, pretty new for the healthcare system to offer, you know, kind of across the board to offer telemedicine or phone visits. And there are some places that do that. Some hospital systems do that, some practices, but to kind of make that a going standard. So then that way, if somebody is sick, they can stay home. We can kind of discuss it through and do a thorough history, using the phone. So that's one thing, a lot of practices are trying to implement, our practice as well. Other things, if we have people that's coming in that's sick. So, you know, if they call, first thing when they walk in, we are asking them to put on a mask just because they themselves, you know, are contagious. They can sneeze or cough and spread those droplets. Other things we're doing too, we have designated rooms. So a lot of hospitals also have designated units. Our clinics, since we're smaller, we have certain rooms throughout our clinic to designate somebody to go in those rooms. And then we have our personal protective equipment. We have our, you know, the rooms are labeled. Then we also have a cleaning procedure as well. You know, if someone is, we suspect somebody to be positive, you know, what we're doing there. Some other hospital systems, what they're doing a drive-through clinic. So it's kind of like a fast food, as you can say. But people are calling in. They're calling the nurse's triage line. If they screen positive, they'll recommend somebody to come in to get screened. They will actually drive up. You have doctors and nurses that's in their personal protective equipment. So they're wearing goggles, face masks. They're wearing the N95 masks. They're putting on the gowns, the gloves. They're actually swabbing people in their cars and running them. So that's one thing that's really unique to medicine that, you know, normally you would come inside, but they have these drive-through clinics that keep people safe. So they'll stay in their car to wait for the results to come back. You know, we as doctors and nurses, you know, we'll do our assessment and, you know, and then take the lab back to have it ran. So, and for me, you know, I just teach my medical assistants definitely, you know, wearing gloves, definitely in between patients, want to wash with soap and water. If you don't have hand sanitizer, me, you know, I'm pushing for our clinic to wash with soap and water. We do have hand sanitizer, you know, by each room, at the front desk, in our waiting areas as well. And then after each patient, thoroughly wiping down each room with disinfectant wipes using Clorox bleach. So those are some things that we're putting into play so that we won't, you know, spread the disease. And whether it's coronavirus or influenza or even some of our other viruses that's in a community, you know, those are measures that we need to take anyway to help prevent the spread. So there was a discussion just being a doctor that, you know, sometimes we are the ones on the front line that get exposed, you know, so definitely we have to make sure that, you know, we're gowned up and, you know, that we're taking our own safety, you know, into mind. And even the nurses, you know, that we're the ones that's often often exposed.
It's times like this where we really need to really give a special thank you to the doctors, to the nurses, police officers, the paramedics, all the people who are on the front line.
Firefighters. Yeah, I agree. You know, unfortunately, we get into this line of work because we want to help people. And when, you know, when times like this come, we got to be out there, you know. And then not only that, we have to calm the public, you know. I can't tell you how many times people have called and I got coronavirus and, you know, and it's just like, you know, you have to kind of reassure people and, you know, decrease that anxiety. And just even within, you know, within the healthcare system, you know, you have people that, you know, this is new. There's no actual treatment for it. So people are scared. They're fearful.
You think that fear is really is driving the toilet paper shortage and all this coming out?
Yes.
Just crazy.
I know. It's crazy. It's like there's a limit now on how, you know, number of toilet paper, yeah, that you can take. And in our local grocery store, I try to go grocery, I get some, so I like to use Instacart. I don't like shopping in a grocery store too much anymore, but I couldn't even get any meat. All the meat was gone. Like I had to get some frozen shrimp and like chicken and ground beef and, you know, turkey, all of that was gone from the store. So, but yeah, with the toilet paper, you know, so I think where people could be getting a little of that from, there were some reported cases of people getting like diarrhea beforehand, but like, you know, I just think people are getting nervous and they're going out stocking up on toilet paper and, you know, I agree.
I think people are watching too many zombie movies.
Right.
It's just crazy.
Right. I had someone tell me, they said, I don't know if you watched The Walking Dead, but I was like, so with The Walking Dead, it was kind of, you know, it started off. Do you watch that series at all?
I did not.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Cut off for a second there.
Oh, yeah. So it's like a new, it was a new virus that entered the population. It kind of was going on now, but what happened, that's the new virus that was killing people. When they came back to life, they became a zombie. And so that's where The Walking Dead had, came from. So somebody was just joking around. I was like, that'd be so crazy. This was like The Walking Dead. I was like, I hope not. But it started just like this, the CDC, everything shut down, food became scarce. So, you know, I don't think we're there.
I think that's driving a lot of fear. People are looking at that. I never watched the show, but I watched other similar shows, right? There was another one, I think last summer, it's called Black Summer. That was on Netflix, World War Z. with Brad Pitt, that movie, and just so many so many of these zombie apocalyptic type of
TV shows, and that's driving his fear,
you know.
I agree. I think it's that, but I also think, you know, just with our government and our public, you know, our healthcare system, we're doing the best that we can, but like every day we're getting new information coming out. You know, so it's kind of like things are changing, things are evolving, you know, and it's day to day. And I think for people it's new. And I really think people get fearful or afraid when the healthcare system, when doctors and nurses don't really, you know, this is something new to us. There's no test for it. There's no vaccine. There's no treatment. So it's kind of like, what do you do? You know, people rely on medicine to be able to take care of you, to, you know, to provide symptomatic treatment, to, you know, be facilitators of healing. And, you know, and just like with this one, we don't have anything, you know, to really help treat coronavirus, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
So I see a couple of people in the chat room. If they want to say something, I think there should be some type of icon on your phone. Say, kind of call in. And if you would like to ask a question, Dr. Turner is ready, willing, and able.
Yes, yes, yes. And I think, you know, as people are dropping their questions, another big population, you know, I don't want us to forget about is our homeless population. You know, thinking about, you know, a lot of them sleeping in shelters, not having access to food. And so there's a big push. I think the Homeless Society of America, I believe that's correct. You know, just how to care for our homeless population. Those forests with shelters, they're going to be shutting down. So hopefully, you know, a lot of cities are, you know, taking into account that we need to have that safe space for our homeless population. A lot of them do have, you know, underlying medical conditions that's untreated. So, and that's another huge area. And then, of course, you know, I'm always talking about opioids. So people who are actively using drugs, you know, some things that I tell people as I'm doing a lot of my community speaking and community engagements, you know, the risk of transmission among that population is also huge as well. They're sharing needles, you know, sharing, you know, drug paraphernalia, sharing straws and cups and things like that. You know, that's another way that this virus can easily transmit to that population, you know, if they don't take necessary measures into place. So some things I tell people, you know, don't reuse needles, don't reuse, you know, the drug paraphernalia, don't share cups or, you know, straws and things along those lines, because, you know, that's for that community, you know, it's that's a sense of community to share things like that. But we have to think about the coronavirus and those populations, the homeless population, you know, when we're talking about this disease as well.
So I just got a message on a messenger saying there's a lot more than just four people. So I apologize. You know, I don't know what kind of technical difficulties are going on. So if there's more people in here, thank you and welcome. And
yeah.
If you want, there should be the little phone icon. I think if you click on that, hopefully it goes through. But if anyone's clicked on it yet, it's not has not shown up on my end.
Yeah, I don't see anything either. Or I mean, I see the chat box. I guess if they want to drop a question in the chat box.
Yeah, you know, can definitely put something in the chat box. We can definitely see. I should be able to see that.
Right.
Yeah, once again, this homeless situation, as you were mentioning, is just another problem that has become, mm-hmm. as you said, unroofing the problem of our social safety nets that are non-existent right. here, right? From the, right. from our kids. Mm-hmm. to our homeless right. population, right? Mm-hmm. And this is what frustrates me about, and again, I'm going to go a little bit political here, for those people who say that they are so, you know, the anti-abortion crowd in particular, I'm pro-life. Well, where are you on situations about kids? Where are you right. in situations about our homeless? Where are you about situations about mass incarceration and all this kind of
stuff? Right. I agree with you on all of that. And I think the other thing too, you know, this makes me think about our middle class worker. You know, let's say you have a single mom with two kids and the job is shutting down, hourly salary. You know, the schools are closing. Just thinking about that dynamic, you know, a lot of people don't even get sick leave. You know, they don't get, you know, paid vacation time. They're not salaried employees. So just looking at that, you know, just within that, the support of somebody with an hourly job, going to work, you know, living paycheck to paycheck, you know, if businesses close down, we have to make sure we have a way that those families can still function, you know, that the mom can still go to the grocery store and get whatever item she needs. So just even within that, like, you know, as we're putting this information out, we have to think about everyone that this is going to affect, because it's not only going to be the healthcare worker or the person with the disease, it's going to be whole communities that we're infecting, you know, that we're affecting. If that mom, you know, don't get a paycheck for 2 weeks, how her bill is going to be paid. So then we have to think about, you know, utility companies not cutting off people gas or electricity because they're behind. So, you know, and I know some utility companies are doing some things with not, you know, cutting people, you know, lights out or things like that. But, you know, we have to think of the ripple effects, you know, that can happen because of one decision that's made. So hopefully with a lot of these laws that come out, that they'll put that into place. You know, so I think that'd be huge.
Yeah, I definitely think that, and I'm hoping that we don't get hit in the back end, right? So they're yeah. lowering interest rates, they're lowering gas prices, plane tickets are low, mm-hmm. and the next thing you know, they try to double the prices in order to try to recoup their money.
Right. But I think right now, I don't know who's going to be traveling right now. I know I'm not.
Well, I got to be honest. I'm going to be completely honest. I was thinking about it. I mean, if I can get that.
now I can see you want to buy a plane ticket for a future trip. Now that may be a good idea. You may get a really great rate.
Yeah. I just come back home and be laid up for 3 weeks, but hey, it might be worth it if I can go to the Bahamas and sip on my.
Right. But yeah, so hopefully people have some questions. But yeah, I think, you know, as things evolve, you know, we're going to each day to day, we're going to be learning more and more about this. And, so I know with those clinical trials, hopefully, you know, they can expedite that process. But like I said, it was a vaccine. They're going to first, do a phase 1 trial, in which phase 1 trials, they have to identify the safety and effectiveness of the vaccine. But by the time we actually see that, it may be months and months down the road, but at least I know, you know, a vaccine has been developed. We just now have to put it into, you know, testing to see, you know, if it's effective. So that's a good thing, too. And I think there was a study drug it's not available in the United States. I believe it was China. I can't remember which country, but there is a drug that was developed, but it is a trial. And so I don't know any studies on that right now. So I will say that the healthcare researchers are definitely working hard as they can to come up with treatment options, vaccines, for the coronavirus right now, which is a good thing.
Many people are scared of vaccines for whatever reasons. What is your opinion about that? I mean, whether it's the flu vaccine and in these vaccines for kids and they cause autism.
Right. I strongly recommend vaccines. I am 100% for vaccines. So, you know, if you look at it with a lot of the routine vaccines that we give kids right now, back then, these were diseases that kill kids, polio. You know, people right now, I think people don't see the harm that was done back then because we've had vaccines around for so long. So for me, I strongly recommend it because what's going to happen if we, you know, get to a point where we're not vaccinating people or, you know, our families are being so against vaccines, we're going to see a reemergence of these deadly viruses and bacteria that we once, you know, had under control with a vaccine. So for me, I strongly recommend it. Every flu season, I get my vaccine. My daughter, you know, I recommend everyone getting their flu vaccine. You know, just it's one way to help prevent, you know, something like this from happening.
Yeah. Very good. On another note, is there, and you're probably going to tell us no, is there a link between vaccines and vaccines in autism?
No. Okay.
Moving on.
Right. I mean, I hear that a lot, but I mean, you know, like I said, I always counsel people. I mean, and for families who come in. So here's one thing too, you know, I get it. I understand the fears. People, you know, you have to look at our history. I know we always talk about our history when we get to talking, but you have to look at, you know, when vaccines were developed and created and think about, you know, especially with the mistrust in the healthcare system when it came to different communities. So, you know, for example, with the, you know, of course, the Tuskegee Institute,
right.
You know, that left severe anxiety and an impact on the African-American community for generations and generations and generations. You know, I mean, even today, if I see an older, you know, African-American person in my office, you know, I'm still I'm still kind of dealing with some of the myths or the concerns that distrust of the healthcare system based off of things that happened years ago. So, you know, from that standpoint, I think as a physician, acknowledging the patient's concern and not just being so heady and say, you better get this because I said so, you know, that's not the approach you should take. So for me, you know, I sit down with my patients, those who have a strong opposition to vaccines, I actually will pull up the diseases that these vaccines will cause. And I will walk them through and say, you know, this is why this vaccine was invented. This is what I'm trying to protect your child from. You know, explain the risk and benefits to all of this. You know, because people, they're able to make an educated decision. And it's my job to make sure I give you all the information so we can make the decision together. But I will recommend it. But I think that's the approach. You know, as a physician, I always say we should not be telling patients what to do. We should be joining in with a conversation, a two-way conversation. I'm telling you my knowledge that I have. I'm listening to you. So we can come to an agreement on what's the best treatment outcome for you, knowing that I may say I strongly recommend this, you know?
As a Black officer, I was often asked, you know, how do I feel about, you know, legacy, history of the police and all that kind of stuff. You're obviously a Black female, dealing with the same legacy and history of mm-hmm. the medical field. And like you just said, the Tuskegee experiments. And also, what's that book? Oh, geez, I can't remember. Medical Apartheid, I think it is.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, that is an awesome book. I recommend everyone read that book. Yeah, that is an awesome book.
Right, right, right. So talk about that and how you dealt with that, just going to that field.
Yeah. So what's interesting, that book, I actually read that book maybe about a few years ago. And I'm gonna be honest, it's so interesting that we don't learn that stuff in medical school. So, you know, we taught the medicine and then they send me in to see a patient tell me no for some reason, but it's like, you have to take all of that into historical, perspective. And so I'm trying to think of the urogynecologist, I'm going blank right now, but he developed the pap smear
and all that stuff.
No, not the pap smear, the fistula repair in women. And I'll get his name. I probably should Google it really quick while we're talking. And,
what's her name? She wrote, New Jim Crow. She wrote that. She talked about it in the New Jim Crow.
She did. So the guy, he actually was a physician at St. Louis University. And so I didn't know that. You know, I did all my training at St. Louis University. And our urogynecology department is awesome. And I'm like, this whole time, I had no idea that here we have this guy who did his practice experiments on Black women. And what he did was, it was really sad that he withheld anesthesia from the women. Now, before he started practicing his surgical procedure, anesthesia was invented about 3 or 4 years before he started doing this. And once he perfected his procedure in Black women, he moved to white women with their procedure, and he did it with anesthesia. And the other thing that's so sad about this, after he did the procedure, and it was no pain control with this, and no pain management during a procedure, and they actually said that they had other women, other people were literally holding these women down. And when he repaired the fish, and I'll talk a little bit about how the fish were, those were repaired. And so afterwards, he would give them morphine to manage their pain. And the amount of morphine he was giving them, they developed opioid use disorder. So now you have women that who he's doing, you know, it's at 20-something surgeries per year on these women. And then you're giving them morphine right afterwards. So now they develop an addiction to opioids back then. And with opioids, how that worked, that's that, you know, it drive that crank, that craving, that hunger. So you had these women wanting to, you know, it was a never ending cycle. And it's like, this is crazy that this was never taught in medical school. And with the fistulas, what happened, these were women who, after they, you know, they delivered vaginally, a lot of times when they use instruments, you know, the repair could have been really bad. And unfortunately, the way that some of the women healed, it left a track between the bladder and the vagina. So they were leaking out urine, you know, really uncomfortable being shown in a community. So he wanted to develop this surgery, and he perfected it on Black women and moved it over to white women. And now he became the father of urogynecology. You know, I'm like, this is crazy. So, yeah, if anybody have not read that book, definitely read that book. Marion Sims, J. Marion Sims, that's his name, the father of Eurogun. So yeah, that whole story is crazy. And to think of, you know, it was affiliated here with SLU. I think he moved here or something, but there's an affiliation with St. Louis University here in St. Louis.
Oh, geez. Yeah, that's very, very terrible.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot. But I mean, but thinking about that, you know, going back to the original question, you know, thinking about that and moving forward, I can see that how, you know, there's a lot of fear in a community, especially, you know, communities that were often left out. And I would say definitely Black communities were thinking that, you know, maybe this was something that the U.S. government purposely put this out. You know, there's so many. And I actually heard somebody say that on my Facebook page, this was a way to control the Black population. Like, you know, I'm actually hearing things like that.
Well, you know, that's coming.
It is. Right. But you have to take that historical perspective in mind that, you know, that mistrust of the medical system is there and it's going to be there. You know, we're making ways or we're seeing some improvement, but, you know, unfortunately, it's going to be there until we can continue to, I think some ways to fix it. I think we talked about it before, you know, increasing our minorities, in the medical field, whether it's nursing, doctors, you know, even in administration and academic centers, you know, having people see more people of color in key leadership positions, you know, in the medical system. That's one way that we're going to have to continue to push for that.
You know, I just did an interview, yesterday, and I was actually being interviewed for someone else's podcast. And that's mm-hmm. the exact answer that I gave when I talked about, you know, about police officers and how we should conduct ourselves. I said, we got to move up through the ranks. And there is a historical perspective, as you just mentioned. And the only way that we're going to deal with that and the only way we're going to stop all this craziness is from a law enforcement perspective is to move up the ranks and demand that our officers treat people just fairly and all that kind of stuff. And of course, in the medical field, that's the only, it's the same exact thing.
It's the same thing. You gotta have people in place. Yeah.
You gotta have people. And that goes for everything. If in the real estate industry, you want to stop redlining and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
You gotta go up and be in it. So you can't just become recluses.
Right. I agree.
So somebody just wrote to me. I don't know if people are trying to call in, or it's not coming through, but I'm typing in the chat. I don't know if, can you see my types in the chat? Can you see them?
No, I don't see yours. Oh yeah, type in. Yeah, I see. Yeah.
Okay. So I guess people are trying to type in, but somebody sent me a message on coronavirus. So she has two questions. Number one, what is the dangers of being pregnant with the virus?
Right. So, interestingly, there was a recent, ACOG, the American College of Obstetricians, they actually came out with an article saying that for some reason, pregnant women seem to be protected against it. Right now, I would say, you know, they're still looking at, studies and still looking at research, articles right now. Historically, pregnant women, you know, were always thought to be at a greater risk because of the immune system. Is, you know, we don't have that reserve as somebody who's not pregnant. So right now we're still recommending to take the same precautions, you know, as non-pregnant people. But for some reason, it appears that some pregnant women may actually be protected, against the virus. So there's new, things that's coming out. There's a lot more research to be done in that area, but that's the first thing I would say that's kind of coming out about that. But, that's the most I can give right now until we get further guidance with pregnant women. But still the same recommendations for them as well.
Got you. And the next question is, can one get the virus twice, right? You get it, you're over it, can you get it again?
Right. So I would say right now we're not sure, but I would definitely say you can. So for example, with the influenza virus, you know, you can still get the influenza. There's different strains. You can get the influenza virus, you know, twice, hopefully get your vaccine, but some people can get influenza A and then turn around and get influenza B. I will say this, that sometimes with a repeated infection, your immune system have already mounted a response to be able to recognize the coronavirus. So if you were to get it a second time, it may not be as severe as the first because now your immune system can recognize it and say, hey, wait, we saw this before. We need to fight this off. We know what it is. And that's essentially how a vaccine will work, you know, once one become available. So it's likely to get one. I have not heard of any repeated cases of people getting a second time. But if they do, your immune system will be able to recognize it, you know, since you've already had it the first time.
Very good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's all the questions that I see. We've been on for about an hour. So I do apologize to all the other people. I'm understanding there's about 13 people here in the chat. I don't know if you can see them. I can't see them. I can only see.
Yeah, I can't either.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. I just see 11 people or something. Yeah. So
yeah.
I'm glad everyone was able to join. Hopefully, you know, this was helpful. And as we get more information, you know, coming out, you know, I always tell people, you know, the biggest thing in a situation like this is reliable resources. So for me, you know, I'm always on the CDC website or the World Health Organization. So those are the two websites I will, you know, recommend people following for, you know, most accurate, up-to-date information. Because pretty much the CDC, you know, they're guiding the whole country with this. And the World Health Organization is, you know, pretty much guiding the world on it. So definitely reliable resources. Go to those two websites. A lot of local city and county health departments are also putting things out as well. But right now I'm recommending you can definitely follow your city or county health department, but go into the CDC or the World Health Organization to stay up to date on the latest factual information.
Very good. Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I always enjoy it. We always have very good political. I feel like we always like get into that political, historical talk.
Yeah, listen, it needs to happen. And this is unfortunate that, you know, that as Black people, we can't just have a conversation about, okay, you know, the price of cars, you know, and how much, because we had to go back. Okay. Well, you know, the price of car for us was also jacked up 30% because we're Black.
Right. Right. Yeah. I agree. But hopefully the more people hear, you know, hear your podcast, hear us advocating and talking about it, you know, the more that people will kind of come out of that shell and, you know, start being vocal and start, you know, really, really standing up and speaking out. So,
I still want to have you back to talk about just being a Black doctor.
Okay. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Now that's my passion. I love to talk about that. I love to talk to medical students. I mean, you know, I actually thought about trying to, you know, put in for a TED talk just because, you know, it's some interesting things of being a black female, you know, physician and navigating this arena. So I'll love to talk about that in my experiences.
Well, absolutely. Well, awesome. So before you go on TED Talk, I got to get you on here before you blow up.
Right.
So, then you'll be trying to charge me and stuff.
No, never.
Lawrence, Hunter, who the heck is that? I don't know who that is.
No, never. Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. I will gladly come back for free.
Okay. I'm gonna hold you too.
To talk. Right. Well, thank you all. Thank you so much.
Okay. Well, thank you. And we'll talk to you again. And thank you to everyone who is in the chat. We're going to end this now. To people who are there, I do apologize. I mean, this is my first time trying to be on this Podbean, and I think it was fairly successful, the technical difficulties we had. I do apologize if you tried to ask a question. I can't see any messages. I don't know if you guys could see anything that I've written, but I do apologize for that. So, next time we'll try to do something a little more face to face, maybe a Facebook something or where we can see each other and all that kind of stuff. So I'll work out the kinks and we'll keep going.
Perfect.
And I'm definitely going to have Dr. Turner back on. She's going to talk to us about being a Black doctor and we can compare notes. Well, when I was a Black cop, I went through this, and when I was a Black doctor, I went through that. So we're
talking about. Perfect. Perfect.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Take care. Stay safe. Thank
you.
Okay, you
too. Everyone, take care and don't get breathed on. Take care. Bye. Okay. So once again, I want to thank Dr. Kanika Turner for coming on Captain Hunter's podcast. Once again, she's a mountain of wisdom and information, and we're already scheduling to have her come on and just talk about her experiences as being a Black female doctor. I am very much looking forward to that. So if you have any doctors or wannabe doctors, or people who just are very unsure about their futures and their confidence and abilities to do anything, you definitely want to tune into that show. That show will probably be released around May or June. Right now, we're scheduling the appointment for probably the end of August. By the time I get it ready to go, it'll be May or June. So just be on the lookout for that. And once again, I really want to thank Dr. Turner for coming on. I emailed her. She was so happy to do it. And within a couple of days, we got this done. And I think it really came out good and well. And I really appreciate her for coming on. We had a great time once again. And once again, I thank to all the people who actually listened and tuned in. Once again, I have to apologize for the technical difficulties. I did write a very stern letter to Podbean. But nevertheless, so that's it, ladies and gentlemen. Please make sure that you guys are staying safe this social avoidance that we're doing, make sure that we're doing it, washing your hands, singing the happy birthday song or the alphabet song in your mind, sanitizing, cleaning, and just taking care of yourself. Do what you got to do. That's it. Much love and peace.